back in the zone, live from Chenal Country Club. The Access Cup will be underway in no time flat. We will be playing a little golf for good cause coming up in a minute. We go to the Revolution Hotline, though. Current NFL analyst and former Pittsburgh Steeler, Merrill Hodge, joining us in the zone. Merrill, welcome. How are you?
I could not be any better, my brother. How about you?
I'm good. We're going to play golf today on a beautiful day in Arkansas, so I'm pretty happy.
Oh, you lucky dog. Well, the rain just quit here. We're going to get out a little later this afternoon, but it might be under wet conditions.
Now, you live in the South, too?
Well, I'm in northern Kentucky, next to Cincinnati. So not down south as far as you are.
Yeah, you're kind of on the border between north and south, I guess, between Ohio and Kentucky,
yeah.
Then, sort of. We are talking about safety, and I do want to thank our buddy Reggie Swinton, who I know is listening in, for helping us get you to come on with us today. But heads up football, USA football, and looking back through some information about your career, you're a guy who has certainly sustained more than your share of injuries as far as that kind of thing goes, and it's been a real emphasis with the NFL and really for everyone that's involved in football these days to try to be a little more cognizant of safety and concussion specifically.
Well, you're right. Don't thank Reggie, too, because, listen, any opportunity that we have to kind of correct a lot of wildfires that are running around with head trauma, I think the better off that we are, because there's a lot of misinformation that we focus on parents are getting. And so we're trying to do with USA Football and the National Football League is correct the game where it is eroded a little bit and also implement some things that we're learning about this particular injury. You know, the perspective of head trauma, what we try to tell all young players, especially parents who don't know, if you have a mom or dad and son wants to play football, a lot of people say, well, I don't want them to play football because they're worried they're going to get a concussion. But then they go home and they jump on a bike or their rollerblades or skateboards with no helmet and take off. And that has been, there is more emergency room visits from those type of activities than through football. Mm-hmm. The bottom line with all this, with all athletics, all events, is that we need to all help ourselves and educate ourselves on what is head trauma. When it does occur, what are the right things to do? And that's what we're doing with USA Football, is we're giving coaches certification so that when a parent drops their son off, we'd like them to be more involved and engaged with them. But they're safe knowing that that coach, that those administrators there, are going to orchestrate and implement the right procedures if your son or daughter were to have head trauma of any degree. We remove them from the game. They're evaluated and properly treated before they return to play. So we're trying to help parents with that, help the players with that, youth administrative organizations throughout this country. We have ambassadors, about 60 retired players that are helping us part of that program. NFL organizations and their staff are also a part of this, too. So we've got a lot of resources and information out there, and we have targeted youth groups right now. And, we'll keep evolving as the years move on so that we can get the correct information to all those that want to play the game.
Merrill Hodge joining us in the zone on the Revolution Hotline. And I was looking through a story that I read about you, that you were once cleared after a concussion by a doctor over the phone. Is that an accurate story, or
yeah.
Is that how that went down?
And really, there was the problem. You see, has head trauma, did concussions or head trauma just all of a sudden appear? No, it's been part since we were human beings, based on activities that happen. It could happen in diving, soccer, rollerblading, skateboarding, the recess, lunch at school. I mean, if you're active, it could happen in any situation. So where we have failed with head trauma is once it does happen, doesn't matter what the environment it is, when it happens, we've failed to do the right thing. We've failed to get the proper evaluations, treat it correctly, clear the player before they return to whatever activity it was, in this case, football. And that was, that's what happened to me, is I got a severe head trauma on a Monday night game, and I never saw a neurological doctor. I didn't do my cognitive testing again, which I'd originally done in Pittsburgh, but at this time I was in Chicago, and they weren't doing cognitive testing. And a family practitioner cleared me over the phone just with one question: how you feeling? And I said, I feel fine. Now, at the time, when I reflect back on it, shoot, I was still a little foggy. You know, I still kind of had a headache. But I didn't even realize that was a symptom. Therefore, I couldn't have shared it with him had he asked me if I had those things. You know, I wouldn't have been able to tell him that because I didn't even know it was a symptom or part of it. And we are so much more advanced now, but there are so many youth programs, millions of players, parents, administrators, that we need to help educate and understand how you handle head trauma. Because here's what it does. It makes that parent much more comfortable and therefore more confident that their kids are active and involved in football, soccer, lacrosse, rollerblading, skateboarding, you know, bicycle riding. That's the objective. I know the target is football, and that's our foundation. That is our stage we're kind of talking from. But we want it to permeate in all sports, in all activities that our youth are involved in. Keep them active.
And you're one of several ambassadors, and you're not the only heavy hitter in there. I mean, there are a lot of household names from a football standpoint, Barry Sanders, Randall Cunningham among them. And now you all got together and went through a seminar on this, is that right?
Yeah, well, we met in the NFL offices in New York here, I think it was last week, a week or so ago. And, you know, it was a chance, too, that that all people share their ideas, too. You know, the more information that we have, the more that we collaborate and we don't have an ego and say, oh, listen, here's the golden rule. And we try to make sure we're constantly evolving, sharing the most advanced information to youth football parents, players, you know, high school, college, and so forth. The more we're all on the same page, the NCAA, the NFL, high school, youth, the better off that, you know, this particular sport is going to be. The more comfortable parents are going to feel when they go there. They're going to have now, they're going to be armored with, hey, listen, you know, USA Football certifying coaches with proper equipment fitting, proper technique, and proper head trauma awareness. So, you know, a parent can now go to football, hey, are you guys part of the USA Football certification? You know, even though youth football programs we're not running football programs, we're still letting the youth program in your local area run them, but now you have a resource to help educate your coaches, therefore your players and kids are safer when they're going on the field, and you as a parent should feel comfortable on that as long as they're certified by USA Football.
When you're an athlete, of course, you feel, you know, like you can't be injured and these types of things won't happen to you. It's always somebody else. You know, now as we all become parents, it's a little bit different perspective. As a parent, are you comfortable with having your kid play? I mean, is that something that you think about differently from when you were a player as far as the safety concerns?
No, it's really why I got involved, because of what happened to me. I need to correct that, and that's why I say we're correcting the game. You know, I coached my son for 7 years. I was head coach from 6 till he was 14 years old, and I was head coach throughout that whole time frame. Because I wanted to make sure the kids, A, were taught the game correctly and that they were cared for correctly if they got hurt. And keep in mind, let me give you perspective. In 7 years of being the head coach, I had more kids miss practice and games because of recess and lunch at school than they ever did on a football field, keep in mind. So I just wanted that perspective there. Now, I did have a couple kids that had some head trauma, a mild head trauma during the course of those 7 years. And I tell my kids all the time, the start of every year, football is a tough game for tough people, but it's also an intelligent game for smart people. And we're going to be smart when we get hurt. We're going to be smart in how we go about preparing and getting ready to play. And we taught this throughout the whole program. You know, so when somebody has had some trauma, they were removed. They didn't go back in and play. And I will tell you this, the first people who actually wanted me to let them go back in and play was the mom and dad. It wasn't even the players. It wasn't my coaching staff. It was the mom and dad, because they, oh boy, he looks good. He's running around. I go, all those are good signs. However, I need another week. I need clearance. I need you to go to the doctor and make sure that there's nothing that I'm missing here. And then he can play. And as long as we do those things, you do the right thing for that injury, then he returns back in a safe environment. It's when we reintroduce them in the game when they've had some head trauma, the same game, or they don't get evaluated, cleared, checked up, and we're playing them the next week. There's where our major fall has been in football, in youth sports across this country, and we need to change that. We need to implement those things, educate those that are teaching and administering to our youth in all sports, and we're going to create a safer environment. The last thing we need to do is take activities from our kids. We need to stay active. We got to keep our youth active. Obesity issue is the biggest problem in America with youth. So we have to keep athletics and keep them active and keep this environment as safe as we can. And that's why we're so adamant about, you know, these ambassadors and all the people that are involved. They're passionate about the game, what it taught them. When I say taught them, the life lessons that you gathered from playing sports.
Merrill Hodge joining us on the Zone on the Revolution Hotline. For parents and for coaches and those who maybe aspire to be a coach, what do you suggest as far as resources and with this organization and this effort, where do people access all the information and get involved in this?
Hey, let's say that, you know what, my son's turning eight or daughter's turning eight and they want to play football. And I don't know anything about football. I only relate this to soccer. My daughter wanted to play soccer. I didn't know anything about soccer. And I had no resource, so I understand what that feels like. Let's say you're somebody, one of your listeners out there is in that environment, only it's football. Go to usafootball.com. Now, usafootball.com can help you outline practice, drills, all of the certifications that you need, the whole map for how to run practices, how to teach techniques, doesn't matter what the position is, how to handle these particular injuries, manage practice, and all the information and guidance that you would need to help orchestrate it and help you. That would be my area that I would tell them to go there right away. That right there would empower and at least feel confident. Like, hey, listen, I know a little bit now what I'm doing and the right things in all of the especially key issues going on today in sports.
A couple of things before we let you go off topic, if we can. I want to ask you about prepping for your analyst job versus prepping for games and what kind of time you spend on that. Certainly from a physical standpoint, a little bit easier now on the desk than on the field. But talk to me about your preparation and all that goes into that. I cannot imagine the amount of work that goes into getting ready to talk about all these different teams and players on Sunday.
Well, I'll tell you this. You know, when I played, you know, in the NFL, every Sunday I got ready for one defense. I got 6 days to get ready for this one defense that I'm going to play against. Well, and then you're right, then the physical aspects of that on Monday, yeah, I feel a lot different than I feel like on Mondays now. My Mondays, I feel a lot different now. But now I got to get ready for 32 defenses and 32 offenses, and oftentimes, you know, the matchups that those they possess when they collide, you know, whoever is matching up to who. So, you know, it takes an enormous amount of tape study, and I spend anywhere from 45 to 65 hours a week going back over the Sunday's previous games via the coaching tape that we used to watch as players. Best way to evaluate players, best way to evaluate offenses and defenses, and to really know the inside things that fans wouldn't know, and therefore be able to share that with them on Sunday. So it takes a lot of work, but I would say this, I love every minute of it. I enjoy it. I love the game. I'm fascinated about the game, and I go back to being a tough game for tough people. It is. But it also is an extremely cerebral game. You got to be very intelligent. You got to have a certain IQ about you to really play the game at a high level and be consistent. And that all plays a role in the evaluation, why it takes so long to study and evaluate, you know, players and teams.
I don't have the information in front of me. I'm thinking that your career crossed over with Barry Foster in Pittsburgh. Did you play with him there?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, Barry came in. Barry's a heck of a football player. I want to say Barry came in my fifth year in the league, somewhere around there.
Mm-hmm. 90, it looks like it was his first year. Yeah.
Yeah. Is he from that area?
Yeah, he went to Arkansas, so that's why I was asking, yeah.
Yeah, I know he went to Arkansas. You know, he was the year that he tied Dickerson's record, I think it was, you know, we were backfield teammates together. In fact, he broke it against the Indianapolis Colts in Pittsburgh. In fact, the run he made it on, we were struggling. It was one of our staple runs. We were running this play called 38 Boss. And because we ran it so good, obviously teams prepared to stop that. And the Colts were doing a good job of it. And if I remember right, I think there was an outside linebacker named Chip Banks. He was a big dude, man. He was like 6'3", 245, and he was just manhandling us. But the way they were treating it, I said, listen, Barry, we're not being able to kick this guy out. So I'm going to tell you what, I'm going to log him. He's trying to beat me inside. I'll let him beat me inside, and I'm going to get to the outside. And Barry did that, gets to the corner. In fact, he runs right into the offensive coordinator's hand as he broke the record. So, you know, we had some great experiences with Barry, and he was like a rock now. It was like, that dude could run through anything. He was like one mound of muscle.
Yeah, that's a pretty tough backfield tandem right there with you two. So I was curious about that, and I knew Razorback fans would be curious about that some times together. It's good they had some stories for them. But I was going to ask you one more thing. We were discussing, and I'm sure you always get this, about your fashion. You are a very fashion-forward kind of guy. And we're trying to figure out how you get that knot in your tie. I'm like, that is like a double Windsor knot. I mean, just to the nth degree. So you got to tell me.
Go ahead.
Just tell me.
I don't even think it's a double Windsor. Because I actually, listen, I had to, when I had to go to church when I was a young kid, I had to pass a sack when I had to wear a tie. I was showed how to tie the tie one time, and I don't even know what it's called. I'd have to actually go online and find out, you know, what certain tie knots are called. But I've constantly worked on evolving it because I used to first hate how it hung too long, my ties to be too long, because I had this real cool belt buckle when I was a kid and I wanted everybody to see it. So I start shortening my tie, and that's kind of how the tie has become a little wider up top, is because I like my tie a little shorter because I like to wear, people see my belt buckle as well as and my tie not hanging in my lap. So that's kind of how it started. That's how it's evolved. And I have ties that are kind of made to help me tie it that way and stay with that. And then I open my collar a little bit to absorb the size a little bit.
Yeah, well, I mean, you're a thick fella. I'm thinking, you know, I don't know about you. No matter how big my shirts are in the neck, they always still have a hard time getting them to be comfortable. So I was just curious because you're a guy that is you're a snappy dresser. So what does this belt buckle look like that you want to show it off? I gotta ask.
Well, it's just a nice belt buckle. I mean, well, honestly, it was a high school. It was called the Highland Rams belt buckle that I was going to go to high school, so I wanted to be a Highland Ram. Now, this one, I was a kid, so I thought that belt buckle was the best thing. I thought that was the creme de la creme, babe. Nobody could get a better belt buckle than that. And I used to wear that in my dress pants on Sunday. So I loved seeing that belt buckle. I was like, my tie's always blocking it, so I moved it up a little bit. I'm like, oh, that's better.
Simple solution. There you go.
My tie's bigger now.
Yeah, there you go. You got it all covered now. You're good. Well, Merrill, thanks for the insight. We appreciate it. Love to catch up with you around the season if you can break away. I know you're extremely busy. But, again, usafootball.com for more information. And it's certainly very important. You know, we talk about it with professional athletes, and it's, you know, extremely important to get kids started the right way, playing the game the right way, and try to keep them safe. So certainly appreciate the effort you're putting in. Appreciate Reggie Swinton, too, for helping get this together. But, man, we appreciate it so much.
Anytime. You guys need anything, let me know. So, Reggie, thank you, and we look forward to seeing you football in Arkansas growing.
All right, very good. Merrill, thank you. Appreciate
it. Take care.
All right.
Bye-bye.
Merrill Hodge, very good. That was great. Pigskin, that was good. Now we know.
This Sunday, you and I are going to be rocking the giant tie. We're doing it.
That,
in honor of Merrill,
is the rest of the story. Why did he go to the big tie? Because he wanted to show off his even bigger belt buckle. And that's the rest of the story. I love it.
I bet nobody else in the country except right here in central Arkansas understands the genesis of that.
Well, I saw a lot of ears perk up when I started asking him about his tie. So believe me, there are a lot of dudes that watch him on ESPN wondering, how does he get his tie to look like that and why does he do it? So there, you know what? You're welcome. You're welcome, central Arkansas. I'm here to help. Asking all the stupid questions that are fit to be asked. That's the zone. That right there was our show in a nutshell.
That's what this show's about.
Yes. Getting very important people on and then asking them stupid questions that everybody wonders about.
A show
about
nothing, and yet it's about everything.
It is. It's the show. It's the show. It's not about the people. It's the show.
It's all about the show.
It's like Seinfeld, except not even 1 billionth as successful. But other than that, it's almost exactly the same. It's a show about something. I'm just not sure what. Yeah, we're actually a show about something. We're just not sure what it is.
You know, I ate dinner Saturday night in Huntington, New York, on the north shore of Long Island.
Okay.
And you know, and when it says the famous people who are from Huntington.
Did you run into Long Island Lolita or the Long Island?
No, Joey Buttafuoco.
Who's the chick that the Long Island psychic? What's her name? She's got her own reality TV show.
I don't remember.
I don't know.
Not anyway. Bethany.
It's still on.
The two famous people from Huntington, Jason Alexander.
George.
And Edie Falco. Carmella.
Mrs. Yes.
Yes. I'm
like, Teresa Caputo.
This is perfect.
What's that show called?
Long Island Medium.
Long Island Medium.
Oh, yeah. I've never seen it. I've heard of it.
I hate reality TV shows like that. I find her show extremely compelling, and I like her a lot.
Really?
Yes.
Should I watch it?
Yeah, it's worth it.
I'll tune in sometime.
I mean, a lot of it I don't get. I mean, I don't understand the whole thing. I have a hard
time. There's some weird stuff going on Long Island, brother. Like the Amityville Horror. You know, that house saying, get out.
Yeah.
Get out.
Not a fan.
I don't think the house actually said that to him. I think they made it up.
I don't like. I frown on houses that speak.
Talking houses. They're overrated.
I agree. Yeah. It's 11:53. Talking people, not overrated. We have more of it coming up in the zone. Stay tuned. Live from Chenal Country Club. We have a very short segment coming up, so we'll make sure to get Chris Johnson in here. Because he's...